Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts in the Bay Area. I'm Judith Seeger, sitting in this week for host David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with Amy Mueller from the 40th to discuss the 40th annual Bay Area Playwrights Festival. Musicians Tanya Tompkins and Eric Zivian and Eric Hoprich from the Valley of the Moon Music Festival, and Gloria Chen from Institute Music at Menlo. So, I would like to start talking with Amy Mueller.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What changes have you seen? I mean, this is the 40th anniversary. What changes have you seen over, I don't know if you've been there the whole 40 years, but probably not, but what changes primarily have you noticed?
In the organization or in playwriting? We can start with the organization and then we can jump into playwriting.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Cool. I've been at the organization for 17 years. And when I started, Playwrights Foundation had one program every year, which was the annual Bay Area Playwrights Festival. And it was quite renowned nationally for that within the theater community for really finding exceptional emerging writers who were, you know, poised to shift the landscape of theater. And my mandate as I came on as artistic director was to create a center for new play development in San Francisco. I did that. We didn't have an office. We had a mailbox at a post office. Everything was in boxes in somebody's house, all the files.
How did you go about finding playwrights?
Well, we do an annual call for submissions. So way back 17 whole years ago, we got them in the mail. And so we would have a call for submissions. We did a national call and a local call through, you know, magazines and things like newspapers. And there wasn't much online presence. We would send little, you know, notes, emails to graduate programs and, you know, all the places where playwrights would look for opportunities. There were also publications that listed opportunities for playwrights that we would list.
Has the volume of responses changed over the years?
We get about 500 submissions a year, and it's increased, but not exponentially. We have a 3-month open window. We're an organization that accepts plays from anyone writing in English and living, you know, within the Americas.
Right. Could we talk about the 40th festival, please?
Sure, absolutely. The festival, this year's festival is emblematic of all of our festivals, really. You know, the work is exceptional. It is, our festival is a developmental festival, which means that we're working on plays that are in an early draft form. The playwrights have, you know, spent a lot of time crafting the work. They submit them, you know, in one form or another of finished. But, you know, people probably already know this, but, you know, theater is a live medium that, you know, that requires, you know, time and space
and work
to find itself. So it's a medium that occurs within, you know, time and space as opposed to, you know, on the page like a novel.
Right.
So in order to sort of take the work to another level, the writers are offered a studio, exceptional actors, expert directors, and dramaturgs who are people who are similar to a book editor, you know, kind of.
I was talking with Nylon, sorry, earlier, and asked him what's the definition of a dramaturg. The way he put it, it puts the play in context for the participants.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So
and they're also looking at, you know, in new play development, they're looking at structure, they're looking at journey of the characters, mm-hmm. they're looking at places where plays can be maybe more efficient, and helping the writer mm-hmm. think about those things and asking questions that might come from, you know, sort of more the outside, mm-hmm. whereas the playwright's like deeply inside.
Right, right. So, what differences have you seen? I mean, because of the stretch of time, I'm curious. What differences have you seen in audiences over the years?
That's a very, very good question. When I started at Playwrights Foundation, we really didn't have much of an audience. There were a lot of artists and stalwart supporters of the organization who knew about the festival. And so we have really developed a very loyal audience base of primarily avid theater goers, like people who really love theater and go to a lot of theater and are very interested in experiencing a play at its most essential level. So it's extremely intimate, actually. So because you are engaging your imagination as you're listening to and watching the actors and listening to the play, that's not staged. You're mostly engaging with the language, but because of the pacing and the performative aspect of this, you engage imaginatively what the play might look like in your mind.
Ah, so so this is definitely participatory.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice.
And people really love that. People who follow this mm-hmm. love it, and then they bring their friends. And so over the years, we've really developed an audience of people from, you know, 15 years old all the way to, you know, 90 or over. Would you like to hear a little bit about the plays themselves, or...?
Ashley, I'd like to talk to Desdemona, please, okay. Chiang. You are the stage director, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And you have directed an impressive number of plays. What is it in particular that you like about this the workshop?
Oh, I feel like, you know, any good play starts with a good foundation. And programs like Playwrights Foundation provide playwrights the opportunity to test drive the material before it actually gets up on its feet with money and designers and a space. I think people, you know, the act of making a piece of theater is far more complex than just, you know, writing stuff down and putting people on a stage, right? There's a whole process of... Mm-hmm. rewriting, interrogating the material, asking questions about characters, relationships. And I think to do that in a place that that is safe and provides a good resource for collaborators, I think is really essential to a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to have something like this, to be a part of something like this means I get to be on the ground floor of something really exciting, you know, to be involved in a new play in its very mm-hmm. early stages, or sometimes not so early stages, to have input. You know, in a way, I feel like as the director in this process, I'm like the midwife to this play baby that's being made.
Very nice.
And so I'm
very
not
nice.
The mother, but I'm there to make sure that baby's going to come out healthy and 10
lovely.
Fingers and 10 toes, you know,
lovely.
And bright and full of light. So
lovely.
That's what I love to do.
Excellent. Nylon, is it?
Yes.
So, I understand. Let's see. You got started. You trained as an actor, right?
I did.
First?
Oh, I am.
Ah, sorry. And,
And now I write plays.
So which would you rather?
I would say it depends on the conversation I'm trying to have. Sometimes I believe my vessel is best to be the one writing the script, to be the mastermind that's birthing this idea out into the world. And then sometimes my vessel is best for advocating and supporting someone else's voice.
Excellent. Excellent. Tell me, you are... I'm sorry to be so stumbling. This
it's
is
all
the
right.
first time in 40 years I've been
we're
doing
talking.
This. Okay, we're just talking. tell me about the play that I think it's endangered species.
Endangered species, yes.
Tell me about this.
So I've written a story about the Williams family. And this is 2050, 2060, in a world where we hear a lot now that we don't see race. And let's just say that came true. And the melting pot is no longer being stirred, and it's gelled together into this one monolithic culture. And so above ground, everybody is as sweet as apple pie. And below ground, in the Williams family especially, in their basement, they have balked up black culture. So, and something important to know is that the Williams family is black. But to the audience's eyes, they're white. They're wearing blonde wigs. And they don't wear anything that's culturally specific. And they're just getting by and living their lives. And their youngest, little Emma, is starting to question what exactly is going on. So we follow her on this journey where she's becoming awakened to her blackness, to her culture, a key part of herself. And let's just say not all the family likes that. And some of the family really advocates for it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Amy, back to you. Could you talk about the program for this festival, please?
Sure. So Nyland's play, I like to call it an Afrofuturistic
for sure
piece, and it's really intriguing. We have a play by a writer named Hilary Bettis called Magic City. I think it has a new title, but I can't remember. Queen of Basel, mm-hmm, is its brand new title as of yesterday. And that's what happens at the Bay Area Playwrights Festival. Things shift. And this is actually an adaptation of August Strindberg's Miss Julie, set in Miami. It is a play about class, immigration status, and it is an explosive elixir of power. And it's a really interesting adaptation because it has been commissioned by a Spanish and English theater in Florida. And so she, part of the play is playing with Spanish language in its various forms. So one of the characters is actually a Venezuelan immigrant.
Ah.
And so her Spanish is very, very refined. But here, she's a cocktail waitress. And her boyfriend is a...
Colombian, if I'm
right? Cuban.
He's Cuban, yeah, he's Cuban.
Afro-Cuban.
Yes, yes.
And lives in the slums of Miami and is an Uber driver. And he speaks a slang-filled Spanish. So it's all very understandable by an English-speaking audience. Mm-hmm. People shouldn't be turned off. It'd just be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a power clash and beautifully done. Birds of Empathy by Clarence Koo, who actually is an alumni of the Bay Area Playwrights Festival. He was last with us in 2013. And this play is about a neuroatypical gay man who is obsessed with birds. And Audubon is a character in the play. And for all you birders out there, this is a really, really interesting take on birding. And Nathan observes birds as if they were interactions between people to try to get it. And in the meantime, his boyfriend is getting married to someone else, and his mother has moved to Costa Rica, and he's trying to navigate the world. And it's a beautiful piece. Damascus by Bennett Fisher is a high-stakes road rage thriller that delves into the misguided politics of terrorism.
Interesting.
And it involves a Somalian immigrant who's an airporter driver who is bribed to take a young man from the Chicago airport.
From Minnesota to Chicago.
To Minnesota. Thank you. Minnesota to Chicago in the middle of winter. And
okay.
It doesn't go well. And Then there's Endangered Species. We Swim, We Talk, We Go to War by Mona Mansour. And she is a Lebanese-American playwright working with Golden Thread Productions. Mm-hmm. So there's a partnership with Golden Thread Productions in the development of this play. And this is, you know, one stop in its journey. Mm-hmm. And will be produced by Golden Thread next season. And
I think we're getting a little short of time.
Okay.
And I wonder if you could let me know where...
Okay, sure. The whole thing takes place, opens on the 14th, which is this Friday, at Custom Made Theater in San Francisco on Sutter Street. And the plays each will have one reading over the course of the weekend, festival style. So Friday night, there are three plays on Saturday and two plays on Sunday.
Wow.
And then it repeats the following weekend.
That's quite a schedule.
It is, and it's really fun. There are a lot of people who buy festival passes, and they come for the whole weekend. In fact, they have a reserve seat.
Uh-huh.
And they go to, they watch, they listen
no
to a play.
No festival seating, huh?
Yeah, they go to a play, they go out to lunch, they come back and sit in their seat, you know.
Oh, nice, so, nice. Yeah. Very nice. Well, it's been a pleasure to meet you and talk with you, and I wish you the very best of luck.
Yes, lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you can get to our website at BayAreaPlaywrightsFestival.org.
We're back. My next guests are from the Valley of the Moon Music Festival, Tanya Tompkins, Eric Zevian, and Eric Hopfer. And would you like to explain a little bit about the Valley of the Moon Music Festival?
Yes, I would love to. We are in our third season coming up here. It's in Sonoma. It's at the Hannah Boy Center. This is a festival that focuses on classical and romantic chamber music that's probably very familiar to people already if they go to classical concerts, but played on historic instruments. And so it gives it a really different feel and a different focus. This season is actually... the theme is Schumann's World, and what we've done is we've created these seven programs, actually, over the course of July 16th to July 30th that focus on what Schumann loved in other composers, what influenced him. He was actually a critic. He wrote a lot about music as well as being a composer, so there's some of his own music on there, and there's also a lot of composers that he loved, that he thought about. There's even somebody in the opening concert, we were just talking about it out there, that he didn't like very much, Rossini. So the opening concert is July 16th at 4 o'clock, and the other concerts are July 22nd, 23rd, 29th, and 30th, all at the Hannah Boy Center. You can find out about specific programs at www.valleyofthemoonmusicfestival.org. And I'm the cellist in it, and I'm here with the music director, Eric Zevian, who's the pianist, and with Eric Hopfer, who's one of the world's leading experts on the old clarinet and the historic clarinet, and he can tell you all about that as well as demonstrate some of that for us later.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the older instruments, because I'm curious, how did you, any of you, all of you, become interested in the older instruments as opposed to modern and so on?
Well, I probably came, I'll let the others talk for themselves, but I came a little later to actually playing the old piano than the rest of us. I've been doing it for about 17 years or so, which is still, that's still been a while. One of the main reasons is because I met Tanya, and she knew about, and she had been playing old cello for a long time, and she knew contacts where I could find forte pianos. I had been a little interested in it, and it was something that was really kind of waiting for me, because I had been frustrated with certain aspects of the modern piano, certain mushiness and inarticulateness that I hadn't been able to get beyond. I still love playing modern piano. I still like to do that. But there was something that I missed, and so I have been really so happy and so excited to get to know all this classical and romantic music and play it on the early piano.
Well, thank you. We've been listening. I didn't introduce you as Eric Zevian, right?
Yes.
Eric Hopfer, you are sitting there holding a wooden clarinet. Would you like to talk about that?
Sure. It's my favorite subject. But to get back to the question that you asked a minute ago, and what was it attracted?
Yes.
I think it's Eric actually put it very well, in the sense that the other Eric, that is, you really want to reach something when you play the masterworks of, for instance, if we take Mozart as a good example, I think that's kind of good middle ground between the Romantic period that this festival addresses to a large extent, and then of course the Baroque period, which is in a sense the genesis of the period instrument movement. I think that in my case it was this incredible love and for this music, for Mozart's music in particular, and to try to get closer to it and just get some sense of what Mozart would have heard. And that meant then abandoning the black clarinet with all the key work on it and looking at a much, much simpler instrument that was usable in Mozart's time. And it was very exciting for me, because I discovered this kind of thing in the 70s. And in fact, the early music movement had sort of really settled in the Baroque at that time. And there were a few people who were eyeing the late 18th century and possibly even the early 19th century, but they were an anomaly. And so the timing was really good for someone like me, who thought, I'd played the clarinet since I was 7. I was really interested in early music and all these performance practice aspects of it. And so I threw myself into it, which actually initially meant making my own instruments. So I actually made reproductions of 18th century models.
Oh, my gosh.
From the word go.
Where did you get the plans or specs?
Well, you go into museums and measure originals.
Ah.
There are actually a lot of instruments around in different collections in this country as well as in Europe, of course. So I was living at the time. I was living in The Hague in Holland. So that's where that started. So.
Excellent. Tanya, what brought you to it?
You know, there's a big Dutch connection here between all of us, actually. My first introduction to hearing classical music on original instruments was in Amsterdam. I moved there to go study when I was 23. That was a long time ago. And I actually heard Erich Hoprich play in the orchestra of the 18th century a Mozart symphony, and it changed everything for me, because frankly, until that point, I thought Mozart was a little bit boring and childlike, and I didn't get the big deal. And then when I heard it on the original instruments, it completely came to life. And I think as a cellist, part of that was that it was bass-driven, because the modern violins, they're so loud and dominating for that kind of music that it tends to obscure the bass line. And also, the woodwind instruments had such a different color, and the blend itself was so exciting. And, you know, you could just hear, like, oh, that's what he meant. That makes a lot of sense to me now. So that was a real eye-opener. And I spent many years in Holland studying as did Erich Hoprich. And then when I met Erich Zivien, we went back to Holland together, and we found the forte piano that we now own that we're going to be bringing to Sonoma. It's made in 1841 in Vienna, and it's beautiful. And I'll never forget Erich trying it out in these workshops in the countryside in Holland, and just it was such a revelation, I think, for him as well as for me, to be hearing all this beautiful Chopin and a little bit later music played on the historic instruments. So I think that's kind of interesting that we all came to it in Holland.
So what is the main difference between the old instruments and the modern? Is there a main difference?
Well, there are a lot of differences. I think one aspect that we search for and enhance and are used to enhance our performance of this music is the clarity, a little bit more lightness. Something called articulation is extremely important. So that means the kind of attack a note gets, the length of the note, how it relates then to other notes, and that sort of thing is very instrumental. Oriented. I mean, you need the right tool to express yourself with that. And certainly with the pianos, the difference is immediate and obvious, incredibly different.
Erich Zivien, and what's the difference?
Yes, well, what Erich is talking about is that, well, the pianos in those days mostly were made without any metal in the frame, and so that means they don't have as big a sound. It's a little harder to keep them in tune, but they have they don't have as big a sound, but it's also more articulate and a little deeper and more resonant in the bass in a certain sense, not louder, but more resonant. What that does, what they are articulateness and the volume being down means that a lot of balance issues are solved, so that when you play with other instruments and chamber music, you don't have to worry. You can hear every single note that the piano plays. Everything is there. On the piano, you sometimes have to hide. On the modern piano, you sometimes have to hide certain things, because otherwise it'll just overwhelm people. But on the old piano, you can hear everything, and yet it doesn't overwhelm the other instruments, and it really blends beautifully. Because I think maybe because of the lack of the metal in the frame, the piano, the old pianos, are also they blend better with strings. They sound a little bit more like a string instrument and less like a percussion or a wind instrument like a modern piano can sound.
And as a string player, we were using the gut strings, which they used back then, so the strings changed to steel starting in around the 1950s maybe. And still some people were using gut strings even in 1950, so it gradually changed. So now pretty much everybody who's playing, say, in the San Francisco Symphony, it has that wonderful, brilliant sound. That's the sound of steel strings. It's very loud, so volume was a huge concern to get that out there to the back row of the 3,000 people. The pitch went up. Everything, all the stringed instruments became under a much higher tension. So So especially as a cellist, playing with the gut strings and with a forte piano as opposed to a modern piano, it completely changes my my whole MO in a way, because usually the cello is just drowned out by a modern piano, especially, say, like in chamber music, like a piano trio, so violin, cello, piano. Mainly what you do as the cellist is play as loudly as you can every single thing so that you're not completely obliterated. So with the forte piano, it's so fun because that doesn't happen, and then you can naturally start making all this phrasing that wouldn't be available to you if you were just trying to push your sound out. So for me, that's the most gratifying thing. And it's amazing, just by using these historic instruments, that the instruments teach you how to play the music differently. Part of what we do at the festival is we have apprentices. So we have these five young, wonderful musicians that are going to be joining us. And some of them are already interested in historic instruments. Some of them are modern players who want to get to know them better. And we'll be coaching them, and they'll be playing in the concerts with us. And that's also a really exciting thing. It's fun for us, and it's really nice to hear these guys learn about this whole different sound world and hear what they do with it.
Very nice. Eric Hoprich, you are sitting there with this beautiful wooden clarinet. Will you entertain us?
Yeah, I brought this one in particular because although it's the festival is called Schumann and Its World this time, we've decided that the Mozart clarinet quintet somehow fits in. And that's, of course, because Schumann adored Mozart and was an outstanding chamber music composer himself. Unfortunately, he didn't write a clarinet quintet, but he left that to his good friend Brahms. But the Mozart is a very special piece. There are no pieces before that that incorporate clarinet with string quartet. There's plenty of pieces with clarinet string trio where the clarinet is really more or less serves a solo role. Mm-hmm. But the clarinet quintet is the ultimate chamber music piece in the 18th century, in the sense that the work is shared so equally, the instruments blend so beautifully together, and the clarinet is at one moment part of the ensemble and another moment emerges as a solo voice. It's an amazing piece, and it's wonderful to play on, especially with gut strings, what Tanya was talking about, and with a period clarinet. Now, this particular clarinet is very, very special, because Mozart wrote the two important, most important pieces for the clarinet, the clarinet quintet and the clarinet concerto, rather late in his life for a special clarinet player who was a friend of his named Anton Stadler. Now, Stadler had the curious characteristic that he really liked the low sounds, the low range in the clarinet, which hadn't been really used much until then, because many people don't know this, but the clarinet, the name clarinet, is derived from clarino. It's a diminutive of clarinetto, was the first name of the clarinet. So it was actually a trumpet-like instrument initially. The Baroque clarinet, there's a relatively small repertoire for the Baroque clarinet, and all of that stuff sounds like trumpet. It wasn't until the end of the 18th century that they discovered, oh, well, it's actually got a beautiful low register, and it doesn't have to be brash like a trumpet all the time. It can actually carry a melody. And then its role changed. And Mozart, of course, was very important with that. Okay, now getting to the instrument then, I'd just like to play a few notes on this so you get a little bit of an idea of what the sound is, and then explain what this special clarinet was capable of doing. So for most listeners, this probably just basically sounds like a clarinet.
Oh, but it's so much warmer.
Oh, well, okay, good. Glad to hear it. The special thing about this is not just the fact that it has basically no keys, but it has the possibility to play lower. Now, normally the lowest note from a clarinet is one I just played. But this instrument can play a third lower. And it can play the notes in between. Now, Mozart used these low notes sparingly, I would say, in the clarinet quintet, but to a huge effect in the clarinet concerto. It was very, very important that you play that piece on an instrument with the extended low range. And in fact, today, all of the modern makers produce basset clarinets, which is what this is called, for that possibility. The instrument's made of boxwood. As I said, it only has five keys, the basic instrument. But with that, you can manage to do all the things that Mozart asked for.
And did you make this one yourself?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure.
Well, thank you. It really is lovely. It has a, just a lovely, lovely sound.
Thank you.
I don't think I have any more questions, so may I have comments or questions from you?
Well, I just would like to tell listeners what more they can expect from coming up to Sonoma to our festival. One really fun thing is that after every concert, we have a local Sonoma winery that pours their wine, and we can enjoy that out on the patio. You can mingle with the musicians. You can ask us all about the instruments, you know, the music that we played. We like to keep kind of a casual atmosphere, and we'll be talking throughout the concerts about the music and what we're doing. And also we have a lot of wonderful local musicians playing, as well as imported musicians like Eric Hoprich here. Elizabeth Blumenstock, Monica Huggett is coming. She's also a world-renowned violinist who was really at the beginning of the whole early music movement in England. She'll be coming. She'll be teaching and playing. And then some local people, Liana Berube on the viola. We have some excellent singers, Nikki Einfeld, soprano, and Kyle Stiegel, tenor. We have an incredible violinist coming who's going to be playing on the last day in a program called The Age of Bravura. And she'll be playing Paganini on gut strings, which is going to be something to behold. That's going to be amazing. She lives in Boston, and she's a fabulous violinist. We have Cynthia Freifogel, who's returning to the Bay Area from Holland, actually, to play. Jeff LaDur is a local pianist, and he's going to be doing his forte piano debut. And Carla Moore is a local violinist, Holly Piccoli, and all the incredible apprentices that are coming from everywhere.
Thank you very much.
Just want to say all the concerts, except for one, we have one morning concert on the final day at 11, but all the rest of the concerts are all at 4 p.m., which is a very nice time to come up, enjoy yourself, and maybe have a little wine with us and then a little meal afterwards somewhere, and still get home after that. So, and we found people like that.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to listen to a little bit of your music now. Musicians from Valley. No?
Well, we'll play the first one again. Then.
The Robert Schumann Piano Quintet in E flat major. Yes. Thank you. So, welcome back. I'm here with Gloria Chien, who is a pianist,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
I'm getting that right. and she's going to share details about this year's Chamber Music Festival and Institute from Music at Menlo.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
This is actually going to be our 15th anniversary season.
Ah.
It's a very exciting year. And we've always focused on the festival either on one particular composer or a particular genre of music. But this season, we're actually focusing on a particular instrument, the glorious violin. So every single work on the program, every program is kind of an homage to either a great violinist from the past or great composer that had composed for the instrument. We will have 7 main stage concerts, which, you know, the opening concert on Saturday is going to be a big Baroque fest. It was interesting, fascinating listening to the previous group talking about playing on period instruments, and this is actually going to be a bit different, all on modern instruments, but same kind of festival and feeling. And we're going to start with music of Bach, but also his contemporaries Corelli, Vivaldi, lesser-known composers like Locatelli and Farina. Then we move to the classical style of the violin playing. There are concerts focusing on the German tradition, the French tradition, and the last concert will end with violin music written with nationalistic flavors with Ionescu's string octet.
You talked about English,
German and French.
German and French, yes.
Yes.
What are the differences?
Well, the composers, you know, from the German tradition that we're familiar with are Beethoven, Mozart, Brahms, Mendelssohn, and French as composers like Fauré and Franck, Saint-Saëns, and Debussy, Ravel. Well, you're going to have to come and find out how they will play differently for these different composers.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah.
So what does the festival open with? What are you starting with?
Well, on Friday evening, we're going to start with our Encounter series, which we have. It's our lecture series. We have 5 of them throughout the festival. And these are experts in their fields talking about a specific aspect of the violin. So Friday evening, by Aaron Boyd, the violinist of the Escher String Quartet, he's going to be talking about how the violins were made. So we start from the beginning. There is going to be an encounter on Paganini, the devil's violinist. And then we end with the last encounter is actually going to be hosted by Fred Child, our favorite host from Performance Today. He's going to be here leading a session with luthier Sam Zygmuntowicz, who is widely considered as the modern-day Stradivarius. So, and we have several artists at the festival with Sam's instruments. So it's going to be just a really fascinating festival of music from different genres and how to see how the violin has evolved through the ages, but also how composers have composed differently for the instruments throughout the different periods. So we have the main stage concerts, we have these encounter series, and then we also have 5 carte blanche concerts, which are recitals where we invite one or two artists and say, present, pitch an idea to us that's close to your heart. And so there's one as an homage to the great Fritz Kreisler. There's one of the Paganini Caprices. But this one actually with the Schumann accompaniment, which is also will be my first time hearing it. But so it's a very rich festival coming from all kinds of angles, trying to discover and rediscover the violin.
That's very exciting. I'm sure that there's a lot to be discovered, really.
Yes, yeah.
Every age seems to look at the music a little bit differently.
That's right.
And so on. I understand that you have brought some music with
yes.
you.
Yes. We'll be listening just a little bit of the Scriabin Nocturne for left hand for piano.
To this, I find it very difficult to believe that this is just played only with the left hand. That's astonishing.
Thank you.
I'd like you to talk to us about the Institute, please.
Yes. So along with the festival, we also have a chamber music institute, and this education component was right there from the beginning of the festival 15 years ago. David Finkel and Wu Han, the artistic directors, really saw this as the core of our festival. So we've already had almost 400 students coming through the program, and there are two tiers of musicians. Our young performers ranges from ages 9 to 18. And this year we'll have 29 of them. We have 2 9-year-olds. They're really cute. And then the older tier, they are. We have 11 of them from all over the country. They are just great musicians at the cusp of professional careers. And so the older artists will be playing just about every day, actually, presenting concerts. And the younger performers, they have a marathon concert every Saturday afternoon. And all of these events are free and open to the public. And I just learned for the first time, all of them will be live streamed as well on our website.
And so, what is the venue?
We have 3 venues. So 2 of the venues are at Menlo School, which is in Menlo Park. And there's the Stant Hall and Martin Family Hall. And then our bigger venue is at the Menlo Atherton High School, the Performing Arts Center there. So we invite all of you to come join us. But if you can't, please support our kids online. They're phenomenal.
And so do you have a website that
yes,
people
it's
can...
www.music@menlo.org.
Oh, and is the at sign?
Yes. No, sorry, it's AT.
AT.
Yes.
Ah, okay. Yes. Yeah, that could get you into
a
trouble.
A bit confusing. Yes, yeah. It's a 3-week festival running starting this Friday all the way through until August 5th.
August 5th. So that's music at AT, mm-hmm. Menlo.
Yes.
.org, did
yes.
you say?
Yes.
So now you also do you play the harpsichord as well?
I will be playing for the opening concerts. Actually, 4 of our pianists will be playing the harpsichord because of the music from the Baroque period. So this will be a very interesting look into another keyboard instrument for all of us. Yes,
I heard recently. I heard a Scarlatti piece.
Yes.
Played on harpsichord, which mm-hmm. I'd only heard on piano before.
Yeah.
And it was really startling because
The
it's
sound
like a completely
was,
different piece.
The sound was different, but I knew the music. So, it's
like learning a whole new instrument. We're all trying to learn the language, but it's a fascinating instrument, and it's really, really beautiful, especially in this repertoire, in this particular repertoire. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So good. Are there any other concerts that you would like to mention or venues?
I would invite everyone to come to as many events as possible. Music at Menlo, because of all these additional lectures and enrichment programs, it makes it of 3 weeks of just a great immersion of music. So we have a lot of patrons that come and stay for the 3 weeks, and they feel like they've gone through a doctoral course.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But with also just seeing how these students are able to be transformed within these 3 weeks, that's always... I've been the institute director now for 7 years, and that's the most rewarding part for me, is to see how when the kids first step on campus and their transformation through the 3 weeks because of being in that environment and looking up to the older artists and the senior artists, and it's a very inspiring and empowering place.
I can imagine. Yes. I can imagine. Yes. Let's see. We have another musical piece, I believe.
This is Barcarolle by Chopin.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm Judith Seeger, your guest host at Open Air. We're talking with Gloria Chiang, pianist and harpsichordist. What else do you do?
So summertime is always a really fun time for musicians because we go from festival to festival. So before Music at Menlo, we were just at Chamber Music Northwest in Portland, Oregon. And after Music at Menlo, I'm going to a festival in Germany, Moritzburg, outside of Dresden. And then I'm ending the summer with the Lake Champlain Chamber Music Festival in Burlington, Vermont, which I recently joined my husband, Stephen Kim, as co-artistic directors at the festival. I was actually a student of the Menlo Institute 11, 12 years ago. And because of this place, it really had inspired me and empowered me to start my own organization as well. So I have a chamber music series in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where I used to live, and now we're in our ninth season. It's called string theory.
Oh, I love it.
So if you're ever near Chattanooga, Tennessee, come visit us. But, you know, the life of a chamber musician is so rich, and you're constantly on the road playing with different people, combinations of different instruments and repertoire. And then you meet old friends at, you know, very interesting, great, fun places. And so it's a wonderful life. And then to be able to pass that on to the next generation of musicians, it's really great.
Well, you make me wish I had continued with my piano lessons.
It's not too late.
But Gloria, it has been delightful to talk with you.
Thank you so
much. Remind us again of the website.
It's www.musicatmenlo.org. At is AT. And we start this Friday with a lecture and the opening concert on Saturday. And it goes all the way through August 5th.
Thank you again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's Open Air for this week. I've been your host, Judith Seeger, sitting in for David LaTulipe. A reminder that all of our shows are archived at kalw.org. Just search for Open Air or a guest's name. If you have a suggestion for a guest, please send an email to david@kalw.org. My heartfelt thanks to producer Neil Swinkles and board engineer Ashley Ann Kingbunk. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.